Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Amron.
And this is the instant cast for Season 4, Episode 9, titled After, which we all know it's after the prison break by the governor.
Yep.
What did you think of this episode?
I thought it was okay.
It was,
I mean, you know, if you listened to any of our podcasts, the last few podcasts, I've really been looking forward to seeing the storyline. And there's a lot of things I liked about it. I want to see it again. My concern was I just don't know if the actors involved had quite enough to do that heavy lifting.
Wow. Okay. I thought they pulled it off really well.
Okay. Well, I mean,
I was kind of on the other side of the fence there.
The two problems, I'll do the minorest one first. Like, I was super excited to see a flashback, let alone a Michonne flashback.
Uh-huh, me too.
I'm like, holy shit, it's been like 2.5 years since we've seen one of these things. And then when it became a dream sequence, I'm like, okay, I kind of, because it's, you still get basically all the facts of a flashback,
yeah,
with an extra level of context and emotion, right?
Sure. You know, just, and it also, it's a little more interesting,
yeah,
than a flashback, you know?
Yeah. But then when at the end where Michonne just kind of lost her shit and freaked out about and showed some genuine like fear, dread, panic, I don't know if I bought it. And it could be just because I'm not used to that character showing those emotions.
Yeah, this was like a different side of her for sure.
I've seen her be pissed. I've seen her be happy.
Wait. When was she pissed?
95% of the time she's not been happy. And I've seen her like, you know, concerned, alarmed. But I've never seen her just like, you know, and this, I don't know, something about that scream was just a little off for me. And again, it could just be because I'm not used to that character. And then
sure.
Carl, I mean, that was a almost word for word, you know, his speech with his dad being, unconscious about being able to unable to protect everyone. Was just about word for word for what the comic book said with some, you know, factual adjustments for, you know, the fact that there's people there that weren't there.
Okay.
But again, and there's a lot of people on Facebook were kind of like ragging on Carl, like, you know, what the hell's wrong with him, blah, blah, blah. If anything, I would like to have seen some more fury, like just real anger from Carl in that circumstance, because I thought it's perfectly justified for this kid to be angry at this dad in this circumstance.
Yeah, it's weird. So before we get too far into the Carl and Rick relationship here, I wanted to say one more thing about the flashback. I like how it felt like when Carl was sitting there on the floor pointing the gun at his dad, and his dad was kind of reaching for him, like this was going to turn into another flashback or, you know, another dream.
A dream sequence, right?
Because he has that same shirt that he's had on forever, and he looks like a little bit younger. His hair is not as greasy at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was really cool because that kept you guessing. Like, is
right.
Rick a zombie in Carl's dream, or what's going on here?
Right.
So that added kind of another layer. Let's talk about Carl and Rick's relationship. You said that you didn't think there was enough anger shown by Carl.
Right. I don't know if there's not enough. I'm just saying, I think it was there as written. I just don't know that Chandler Riggs had enough bottom to, or had enough stuff inside him to bring all that was on the page to the front. You know, in the comic, it was devastating. And also, as I kind of worried about in the preseason cast, I think even if he had successfully brought the anger, I don't know that I would have bought the later vulnerability either, because in the comics, like Carl's like 8 or 9. And
yeah.
That's a whole, you know, here seeing an 8 or 9 year old talk to his daddy that way is a lot different than seeing an adolescent talk to his dad that way.
Sure.
And then seeing the breakdown and the I can't do it at the end and just kind of acceptance of whatever happens is a lot different when it's coming from an 8 year old, a 9 year old versus 13 year old. So, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm really dogging on the episode, because I'm not. I'm just noting where my expectations were at versus how it got met. But yeah, Carl and his dad, they've been struggling, you know, over the concept of Carl being a man and Carl being ready for responsibility and Carl being able to handle himself. And to see the prison situation blow up in Rick's face, like that he had let the governor be out there, they'd played farmer, and he failed to protect all those people, and yet immediately failed to protect Judith, and yet immediately after that, Rick is already, you know, don't do that, don't do this, stay back behind, let me do this, even though Rick's fucking hardly able to stay on his feet. Yeah. He can't swing a hatchet hard enough to penetrate a zombie's, you know, as a rotten melon head.
A Walker rotted skull.
Yeah, that's the wheat apparently is consistently a bread pudding from what we've seen. And he's lecturing him on his language. I mean, it's laughable how weak Rick is making himself look in comparison to Carl in this episode. So I think in that circumstance, a kid like Carl is going to pop off at his dad. And worry about him. I'd worry about what the hell, what kind of survivor he was if he didn't, honestly.
Yeah, so it's interesting that he will, you know, bang on the walls and curse and just be a general dick to his dad, to his face. But then the only time he's willing to actually say what the problem he has with it is when he's unconscious.
Sure.
So there's a level of, I feel like Carl understands maybe a little bit that this is not totally Rick's fault. Like, he has tried to do what he thought was the right thing, but at the same time, he's very angry at him at the events that have transpired.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I felt there was some kind of balance there that maybe Carl himself wasn't even acknowledging. And then, you know, the opportunity presented itself to yell at his dad. And so he did.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end, when he breaks down, we definitely see that there is a little bit more to it than him just being angry about not being able to protect him.
Yeah, and honestly, this is the scene I kind of was expecting before. I think maybe part of my problem is that Andrew Lincoln just built this fucking scene way up at the various interviews I've seen him give.
Which scene is that?
The one that he had with the Rick and Carl. This whole episode, basically.
Okay, yeah.
And like I said, I think he did a fine job. I was just expecting some, you know, Breaking Bad, you know, Walt, compare this scene to the one where, like, Walter White is, like, hopped up on meds, pain meds, and hallucinates that his son, Walt Jr., is Jesse. I, again, from the way Andrew Lincoln was talking, I was expecting something like that.
Yeah.
And what I got was a mere mortal performance. Well, and
the problem was they didn't have him in his underwear. Like, you can't deliver a performance like that unless you're in your underwear.
Yeah. Now, Rick needed to get out of his boots, out of his jeans. Otherwise, I mean, God, his makeup.
Yeah.
He was beat the fuck in.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He looked really bad. I don't know. I like the episode a lot, man. I don't know that I agree with the problems that you had with it. I thought the acting was really good, especially Danai Gurira just delivered there at the end, especially.
Yes. Again, if she has a weakness, and I'm not saying she has because I need to see the episode twice, I think it's just showing, like, pant-shitting panic and terror.
Sure.
Because, yeah, I definitely bought the emotion. I definitely bought I thought the most moving scene was the one that her and Rick had through the door, where she finally realized she found these guys. She's going to be reunited with her, what is now her family, and Rick feeling the same. I thought that was the most powerful moment in the episode, and that was very weird considering the subject matter for me.
Yeah, and then the final line where he just says, "It's for you."
Yeah. That
was really good.
That was brilliant. That was really good writing.
What else do we want to talk about? I mean, those are the only two plots here.
We
can talk about Joe and Joe Jr.'s barbecue shack being like Daryl's heaven.
What'd you think about the grave worms coming out of the zombie's brain? The one that Carl killed, the last of the zombie dog pile.
That was cool. Sure.
I'm just saying is, like, you know, again, I keep wondering how they're going to raise the bar and how they're going to keep inventing having new interesting walkers. Well, you know, having worms crawling in and out of them is not a bad place to start. What did you think about... I want to have a funny take in my survival review this Friday about Carl eating 128 ounces of chocolate pudding.
No, it was only 112.
Oh, it was 112. So, it was 128.
Doesn't make institution, much of a difference.
An institutional size can of chocolate pudding.
Yeah, that I thought they were beans at first, and I was a little worried.
The poor kid is going to have some interesting bowel movements over the next 24 to 48 hours.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be some spectacular shits taking place. Yeah, did you have a problem with how relatively careless Carl was in this episode?
Not really. I felt like that was about where he needed to be. You know, I mean, yeah. he's not actually a man. He's not the size of a man. And he is inexperienced. I mean, he's gotten a little taste of action in the prison stuff, but
he's never worked solo.
Yeah, exactly. He's always been with Michonne or his dad or somebody.
He's not like a Daryl or a Michonne. I mean, shit, his dad isn't a Daryl and Michonne. And yeah. There's a couple of people making snarky comments about it on Facebook, and then I think someone had the definitive take. I can't remember the name. But he said, you got to remember, this guy is half Lori. So making some questionable decisions is kind of like a genetic thing.
Yeah, somebody in my Twitter feed said that all that poor parenting Lori did is paying off now.
So. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Did you have a problem with how effective Michonne's pet strategy was in this episode?
A little bit. When she was walking like side by side with walkers, I was wondering how they were not detecting her. But
how is that different than if she was just walking side by side with walkers?
Yeah, I really don't know.
The other zombies are like, well, she's got them on a leash. It must be cool.
Yeah. And then when she pulls out her sword, she freaks out. She pulls out her sword and she starts hacking zombies. They don't react to her. They do react to her. So, like,
well, yeah.
So is it the action? Is it the movement that's a problem? If she walks like a zombie, do they think she's a zombie?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to compare this with the second episode in the season one where Glenn and Rick did the guts routine.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think the less you think about this particular thing, the better. And how I thought the camouflage worked is different than the way they showed it on the show. So I doubt we see it again. I'm not going to harp on that too much, but
it was nice to see Michonne's tracking skills as well. I mean, she followed Rick's boot prints right down the muddy path.
Yep.
Found I know those shack.
Know those boots anywhere. I also liked the fact that they had the, what do you call that? I want to say the courage, but it's not. That's a bad word for it. The confidence as writers to just tell the story about Michonne and Carl, really.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't see any lip service paid to what the hell's going on with Daryl, Tyrese, Glenn, and the bus full of misfit toys. Mm-hmm. I liked that about that. And I think in seasons past, they wouldn't have had that confidence. They'd had to touch in with, like, fan favorite Daryl at least, or... Yeah. Have him in the cold open something. But I like the fact that they did have that confidence to do that.
Yeah, at moments during the show, I was thinking, oh, man, maybe they should have just stuck with Rick and Carl for this episode. Mm-hmm. Because when they'd throw in a shot of Michonne, like, looking at boot prints on the ground, it would kind of break up the tension that I was feeling between Rick and Carl a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think grouping them as a package, Michonne, Rick, and Carl, makes a lot of sense because, you know, Carl's kind of the central point here. You got his father, and then you got Michonne, who we know has made best friends with Carl, as we saw, like, back when he was trying to get Judith a crib or whatever.
Right.
They had some really good moments there. So that makes a lot of sense to package them, and it makes me wonder, how are they going to package some of these other character stories?
Yeah, it'd be cool. It'd be fine by me, like we discussed, if they did the first half of the season, maybe even a little bit more, where, you know, this is the episode where we find out what happened with the bus, and this is the episode where we find out what happened to Tyrese, and, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe have one or two survivor groups you focus on until you bring them all back together and in focus.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like it gives it a little bit more room to breathe. And I didn't find that the cutting back to Michonne was a pacing problem, because it felt like the Rick and Carl story was basically three acts. And the Michonne stuff fit in between those. It was almost like a nice little intermission before we got to the next development between Rick and Carl. So
okay.
To me, it's like I don't know what we'd have gained, because I would have thought that one comic book would have been enough material for 45 minutes of television, but it turns out it wasn't.
Hmm.
You know, and if there wasn't that 10 minutes of Michonne in there, number one, the Michonne stuff was really good. And number two, if there wasn't that there, they really had to pad it out with, you know, Carl fucking around some more. And I don't know that the episode would have been well served with that.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to talk about?
No. Excited to get the see what everybody else thought about it. Seems like just gauging off Facebook, it was generally positive.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it was anybody will try to say it's the best season premiere or mid-season premiere that we've ever had. But, you know, seemed like a solid episode.
Yeah, same here. I liked it a lot. All right, why don't you take us out?
Well, we want to know what you think. You can send that information in to us at watchingdead@baldmove.com, and we will consider your feedback for our full-length episode that we'll be releasing on Tuesday, late Tuesday evening probably. And you can follow Jim on Twitter. We always do live tweets on the show night on Sunday nights at Bald Move. And you can follow me on Facebook.com/Bald Move for the same. It's a lot of fun, fun, lighthearted, snarky people. And we have a lot of good times doing it. That's all I got.
All right.
We are also, just in case you didn't know, in case you're just joining us, we are doing a shit ton of House of Cards. We're dropping like two episodes a day from here until the premiere of season two on Netflix on Valentine's Day weekend, that Saturday. I think we're up to episode five. We'll be releasing six or seven tomorrow, I imagine. So check that out. I think I was real proud of the work we did. We actually did a marathon of season one last weekend to prepare for the marathon we're going to be doing this Valentine's Day weekend. And I thought it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back on Tuesday, as Aaron said. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.